Good morning, everyone. Thank you. I will announce that staff tells me we do not have a quorum for the governing board meeting for today. I will call this a workshop until we do have a quorum to take action on one item. Everything else is a workshop presentation, an item that would require governing board approval and a quorum is approval of the previous meeting minutes. Ask Eric to clarify.
Okay, it sounds like we do have a quorum, so you can call the meeting to order.
Very good. Jonathan Bishop is going to sit here. Jonathan's going to sit there. Good. Okay, we do have a quorum. The meeting of the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission Governing Board for June 16th is called to order. Caitlin, would you go over the meeting procedures, please?
Certainly. Thank you, Chair. Okay, so this meeting is in a hybrid format, in which members and the public are participating both remotely and in person. We greatly appreciate your patience if we experience any technical issues or hiccups. The remote locations listed on the agenda are accessible to the public and should allow for the public to observe and address the commission. To help facilitate public comment, following member roll call, I will ask members participating remotely to identify the number of members of the public that are present at their location. And if you should have any or need any technical support during the meeting from Zoom, please email it@agpvideo.com. Now I will provide some information on how public participation will be organized for today's meeting. Members of the public may request to comment in the following ways. If you're in person, please fill out a speaker card located at the table in the back of the room. If you're participating via Zoom, you can raise your hand virtually. When we reach the item under which you'd like to speak, the raise hand function can be found at the bottom of the screen on the Zoom app. And if you're calling in over the phone, dial *9 to raise your hand and *6 to unmute yourself. If you're participating at a remote location listed on page 4 of the agenda, please notify the member that is at that location, who will then use the Zoom controls to notify staff that you'd like to speak. This meeting is being recorded and live streamed, so we ask that you please speak clearly. For members who are in person, please turn on your microphone when you speak and turn it off when you finish. It should show a green light if it's on, red if it's off. So that concludes the overview of meeting logistics. Mr. Chair, I'd recommend we move to member roll call for attendance and introductions.
Thank you very much, Caitlin. Would you call the roll, please?
So I will call members in alphabetical order by last name and invite you to state your affiliation as you're called. Give me one moment to share my screen. Okay, Amy Arzat, participating over Zoom.
Present, here on behalf of Assembly Member Elmer Succi, State Assembly, 66th District.
Thank you. Chair Casper.
Present, representing Las Virgenes Municipal Water District.
Thank you. Tessa Chernofsky.
Here, alternate for Supervisor Sheila Kuehl.
Thank you. Megan Cooper, participating remotely.
Hi, I'm here, Megan Cooper with the California State Coastal Conservancy, and I don't have any members of the public here with me.
Thank you. John Dorsey? Tom Ford?
Present, Director of Santa Monica Bay National Estuary Program.
Thank you. Misty Kearns, participating remotely?
Yes, Misty Kearns, representing the coastal tourism community from Santa Monica Travel and Tourism.
Thank you. Yasmin Imani McMorrin, participating remotely.
Here, There's no members of the public present. Thank you.
Thank you. Annalisa Moe?
Here, representing Heal the Bay as an alternate for Cats and Bees.
Thank you. Maura Monaghan?
Here, representing LA Waterkeeper and an alternate for Bruce Resnick.
Thank you. Kun Nguyen?
President Kun Nguyen, attending on behalf of Public Works Director, LA County Public Works Director Mark Estrella.
Thank you. Randy Rodriguez?
Present for California Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Thank you. Rory Skay?
Present, representing Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy.
Thank you. Merle Tashtian?
Present, representing Los Angeles County Department of Beaches and Harbors, alternate for Director Gary Jones.
Thank you. Martha Tremblay?
Present, representing Los Angeles County Sanitation District, alternate for Robert Ferrante.
Thank you. Stephen Erring?
Present, and representing City of Malibu.
Thank you. Dennis Washburn?
This is Dennis Washburn, and I'm representing the Resource Conservation District of the Santa Monica Mountains, and I'm proud to say that Rosie Daggett is here with us today from the district.
And Jeff Wilson. Thank you. So that...
Oh, would you like to introduce yourself? Jeff Wilson, Chevron, on Business and Economic Interest Representative.
Thank you. So that'll conclude member roll call introductions. And I believe all remote members stated that they have no members of the public present at their location.
Caitlin, I have one addition.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, it's okay. I'm a little late. My name's Abby Austin. I'm an alternate for LA City Council Member Mike Bonin. Okay, I have you noted as present. Thank you. Okay, so I now recommend we move to item one for public comment.
Very good. Members of the public may comment on items not on the agenda, informational items, or testimony on any action item will be generally limited to a combined total of no more than 4 minutes per person. Public testimony regarding action items on the agenda will be considered subsequent to any staff report briefing or presentation, and the time allocated to public testimony is subject to the discretion of the chair. Do you have anyone registered to speak on agenda item one? Comments from members of the public.
Yes, we have one request in advance to speak. So I will go ahead and allow Walter Lamb to speak. You requested I share a video, so give me one moment to share that. Great. And Walter, if you'd like me to, just let me know when you'd like me to start the video.
Yes, thank you, Caitlin. It is about a 4 minute video, so I would say go ahead and just jump right into the video and I'll just let it go for itself. Thanks.
Teach the grandparents this plant, okay? Does anyone have a guess as to what you think this plant is? Kind of smells like something you cook with or something. The other group said rosemary.
Okay, kind of close.
This one, okay, so I'm going to teach each of you one thing about this plant and then. Teach the grandparents this plant, okay? Does anyone have a guess as to what you think this plant is?
Grapes.
Kind of smells like something you cook with or something. The other group said rosemary. Okay, kind of close. This one. Okay, so I'm going to teach each of you one thing about this plant, and then it's your job to teach the next group, okay? Okay, so you are going to learn the name, okay?
Okay.
This is called California sagebrush.
Okay, that's a California ground squirrel. That's not the kind of squirrel you have at your school. See right at the right side of the road?
Yes, I see it.
If you also want to come with your family, it's open from Wednesday to Saturday from 8 in the morning to 1 p.m.
And known presence of homeless encampments and illegal activities, including drug use and the storage, processing, and transport of stolen goods. I think we should have a whereas that mentions that substantial hazards are present, physical hazards that endanger the public and expose the state of California to legal liability. And with that, I'm talking about unmanaged trails, completely unmanaged vegetation, fire hazards, as well as the human element, the homeless encampments and criminal activity that occurs there. And, like, there could be a bicycle chop shop over there or a drug dealer going on right there. And I want to remind this group that when we were taking people into Area A, it was with armed rangers from the MRCA. So I'm just trying to remind everyone of the baseline that we're talking about here in Area A. And if you haven't been there in a while, then go ride your bike down the bike path, go up Fiji Way, and take a look at the area that we're talking about before we irresponsibly encourage access that could cause harm. Thank you.
That is definitely one of the ways that shells can get up this high. What's another way?
I'm Scott Culbertson, Executive Director of the Friends. If you want meaningful, increased public access, then support the Biana Wetlands Restoration Project.
And my interest here is in giving the public access to that public land. So I'm really gratified to see that there are young people who are prepared to do this if we can get the permission for it.
My interpretation is that he's just responding to the call by the stakeholders that they want to talk about it. He doesn't even seem to indicate that he knows what the issue is or that he's, but that he just wants to provide that opportunity. And my interpretation is that that's a useless exercise. We've done it repeatedly.
The seat for the West Side Pod is for the West Side Pod. My understanding, Kevin, is that your position is to represent the COG. Now, if the COG has taken a position on Bayona, I would love to see it. But, and if the city of Santa Monica has also, I'd love to see that. But I haven't seen either. And at the end of the day, I'm not comfortable with how your membership on this commission. And
it is certainly disappointing to find that my advocating for public access to public land is such an unpopular opinion with some members that it's led to a challenge to my representation here from a non-voting member.
Walter, that is the end of the 4 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Walter. Thank you, Caitlin. Do we have any other speakers? And item?
No, we do not.
Thank you very much. I'll report. Staff have any changes proposed to today's agenda?
No changes proposed.
Thank you. Then the order of the agenda will stand as published. I'll report as chair that last executive committee meeting was held on May 19th. Commission staff updated the executive committee on their work, including announcing that the remaining 22 executive committee meetings will be held at the West Basin Edward C. Little Water Recycling Facility. The NEP director reported on coordination with other national estuary programs requested by Congress for full national estuary program funding up to $1 million per year. Possible. We also anticipate guidance from expected national estuary program funding from the Infrastructure Investments and Jobs Act. Also, submit discussion of a submission of the approved NEP annual work plan, U.S. EPA, Environmental Protection Agency. The program director also reported on estuary program project activities carried out by the Bay Foundation. The executive committee provided comments and approved the proposed governing board agenda items recommended by the commission staff. No closed session. I report next item on the agenda, number 2C, is a report from the Technical Advisory Committee. The Vice Chair of the TAC, John Dorsey, to have a report.
Good morning, everybody. If we could pull those slides up. I took a few pictures to remind everybody why we're here in my book. And that's to protect and improve our Santa Monica Bay shoreline and surrounding environment. These pictures, we have a massive bean clam settlement that's going on right now. If you take a look at this first slide, you'll see some pictures I took yesterday. We had some of our lowest low tides of the year right now. These little bean clams actually was a fishery in Long Beach many years ago. And it's kind of interesting because see that little tuft that looks like a beard on the end of the clam or one the posterior side, that's actually a commensal hydroid. So when you're walking along the beach, you'll see like little tufts of looks like little hairballs sitting on the beach. All those are belonging are all attached to clams. And the next slide just shows how extensive this this array of clams are. You can. So this was taken actually this morning, and that brown dark strip is literally running from the south side of the Chevron groin all the way down to Manhattan Beach and beyond. I once had, I think about 3 or 4 years ago, I had a group of students. I gave them a little mission. Tell me how many clams are between the Chevron jetty and 45th Street in El Porto. We had a settlement like this. And we talked about random stratified sampling techniques and all that kind of stuff. They came up with around 22 million clams. So I said, you don't have to go out and count them. Just give me the stats on how you go about doing this. And they did it. The next picture shows, if you go to that, we have also have a huge settlement of baby sand crabs in town right now. And so this is a snowy egret. And I was watching this thinking that was probably feeding on maybe some small fish and things, but no, they're feeding on sand crabs. And so the sand crabs, the bean clams, are all part of a very important ecosystem that's along our sandy shores. And I think, does the next slide show that little movie I have? Go along the beach, you'll see wrack, that's washed up seaweed. And this is a movie now, and you'll see all these little tiny things popping around. See those? Those are beach hoppers. They're type of amphipod. There's a big picture of one right there. There's probably about 1.5 zillion of these things on the beaches right now down there. These are another really important part of the marine ecosystem because they're fed upon by a lot of other organisms. They break down all that wrack. They're putting more nutrient out into the sands. It's a huge food chain that's going on down there. And so I think that's the end of the slides now. Thanks, Caitlin. Again, I want to emphasize how important it is to try to maintain good, healthy marine ecosystems out there. Tom's going to probably tell you more about them. And I thank LA County Beaches and Harbors for not taking up all that wrack because that's such an important food source. I think our policy now is to keep the wrack from the high tide mark that washes up, keep it in place until they do pick it up if a storm waves will wash it onto the beach face or the beach proper where people like to put their blankets and stuff. But they're letting it stay on that high tide mark, and they're not taking it up, which is awesome. We need it there for all the organisms. This is why we have these programs in place to protect and enhance our beaches. Okay, now for the boring tax stuff, okay? first of all, we want to welcome our new tech members. We got Rosie sitting right over there. Daggett, where's Rosie? Rosie was sitting over there someplace. Oh, you're in the back there, Rosie. Okay, you moved on me.
Okay, Rosie's with the Resource Conservation District, Santa Monica Mountains, and she specializes in freshwater biology, the riparian habitats of the mountains, that sort of thing. We've got Farhana Mohammed from the City of LA, Environmental Monitoring. Terry Nichols from Cal State Northridge, who's looking at oceanography, climate change, and Aldina Mahinto from SQRT, and she's going to be working on toxicology, ecological risk assessment. Our big discussion we had when we met a few weeks ago was the State of the Bay Report. The last one was 2015, and it's time for a new one. Now, that was a very, very large report we put together. It was a whole series of, literally a whole series of published papers. We want to try to get something out pretty soon, though, and it won't be that extensive. We've got a consultant group, three-lane, that's going to help focus on the final design and graphics and consistency, make it very user-friendly, something we could put on the web that people could easily access and understand what we're talking about. Right now, we're trying to figure out the best format for this report. It won't be as in-depth as the last one, but we may focus on certain habitats and, most importantly, improving, looking at how the condition of these habitats has changed since the last update. Also, we want to highlight how these habitats really benefit the people. So we want to make it show like this is worth protecting them. These are the ecosystem services that we're all depending on, and this is how they're really helping our folks who really use the resources, the bay, visit the bay, that sort of thing. We're developing a timeline. It will probably be sometime in 2023, earlier in 2023 than later, I hope. And we're now, again, figuring out the best way to put this information forward, updating what we know about these habitats. And these habitats we're focusing on are the pelagic system, the open water out there, soft bottom, benthos out in the bay, rocky reefs, rocky intertidal, rocky subtidal, sandy shores, coastal wetlands, and the freshwater riparian. And so we'll be working with the members of the TAC and this, the Bay Foundation staff and SMBRC staff. And with that, I'll turn it back to you, Charlie. Any questions? No.
Thank you, John. Any questions? Those are wonderful pictures that you took this morning. Looks like the habitat is in good shape in that area.
It's moving right along, and I'm happy to report I'm over a two-day period, I must have dug 10,000 sand crabs for my granddaughter.
Thank you very much, John. Final call for any questions for John's presentation on the about the work that they have for the next State of the Bay report.
Yes, Hasbury, no questions. I just wanted to note for the record that we have member Jonathan Bishop representing State Water Resources Control Board join us. As well as, okay, and that's it for now.
Thank you. I noticed that E.J. Caldwell, representing West Basin, has arrived to the Water District headquarters and will be present at the meeting shortly. As in, getting called right now. Item on the agenda is item 2D, report from the Chief Administrative Director, and a report from the Santa Monica Bay National Estuary Program Director. Marissa, would you lead it off, please?
Sure, thanks, Charlie. Okay, well, thanks to everybody for being here today. It's very nice to see all of you. Okay, and before I jump into some updates, I want to announce that Wing Tam, who served as an alternate on the commission for many years, has retired. We thank him for his participation, and we're happy to have Susie Santolina as the new alternate for Barbara Romero, representing Department of Public Works, LA Sanitation and Environment. So welcome to Susie. Commission staff are working hard to develop grant agreements for the seven new Prop 50 projects, and because it's been about a year since the request for proposals and we have some new membership, I want to review how important these projects are to implementing the CCMP. In addition to projects that will benefit Santa Monica Bay, this round of the Prop 50 grant program sought projects to fill identified data gaps and monitoring needs that will help us to better assess the state of the bay and inform management actions. This is an impressive and diverse group of projects, including beach restoration, rocky reef and rocky intertidal surveys, eelgrass work, wetlands and small estuaries, species response to climate change, and bioretention basin construction and monitoring. So we're excited about implementation and we'll keep you posted. Commission staff also recently updated our website to include drought resources information. Please take a look and let us know if you have water conservation information to include. This issue was highlighted at the May Executive Committee meeting, and I want to highlight it today. It's a critical time and every drop counts. My hope is that we can adopt water conserving practices and respect for water as a way of life, not just a drought response. Most of you already incorporate water conservation awareness into your work, so we encourage you to amplify the message. We have a presentation from Las Virgenes today, and I welcome member reports on water conservation efforts or resources you can share. Commission staff attended the Bay Foundation board meeting on June 8th and participated in recent dock walker and abalone tagging efforts, so I want to take a moment to acknowledge the Bay Foundation and their staff for continued excellent work and partnership. Commission staff have also continued to respond to Public Records Act requests in coordination with legal counsel. We've had about one request per month in 2022 with varying levels of workload. Now, a few other important items to mention. There was an informative tribal community training session on June 8th, and I saw some members in attendance. It provided discussion on allyship with tribes. We welcome information from members on additional pathways to educate ourselves and ourselves and respectfully build relationships with local tribes to hopefully bring their perspectives to the table. Also, the April 22nd Wallace Annenberg Wildlife Crossing groundbreaking ceremony was a giant success. With contributions from Rory Skay, Clark Stevens, and many other SMBRC members and partners. So I encourage those of you involved to please keep us updated on progress so we can continue the energy and excitement surrounding the example this project provides to wildlife crossings nationwide. There was also a Topanga Lagoon Restoration Project public scoping meeting on June 11th. And if you missed that meeting, you can still submit comments through June 22nd. So please do. There's an ongoing Marine Protected Area Monitoring Ask a Researcher series, and the kelp and rocky intertidal webinars so far have reported positive results due to establishment of MPAs in the Southern California region. Our TAC vice chair might know more about that. A celebration of the completion of the Culver Boulevard Realignment and Stormwater Capture Project is coming up. So we're excited to celebrate the completion of that project. It was partially supported by Commission Prop 84 funding. Also coming up this weekend is June 19th or Juneteenth. This is the annual commemoration of the emancipation of enslaved people in the United States. It marks June 19th, 1865, when troops finally brought news of the 1863 Emancipation Proclamation to enslaved people in Texas and announced that they were free. This is an opportunity for us to learn more about Black history and be of service. Juneteenth is now a paid holiday in some cities, and there are events throughout LA, many hosted by LA County Parks and Rec and supported by the LA County Board of Supervisors. Now, to close, I just want to mention a few local funding updates that I thought were important. The Department of Water Resources released the proposal solicitation package for the second round of Prop 1 Integrated Regional Water Management Implementation Grant Funding. So that's a mouthful there. The timeline starts now, and I can provide the flyer with more information if anyone's interested. The Wildlife Conservation Board funded a $4.83 million grant to the city of Rancho Palos Verdes toward a cooperative project to acquire about 96 acres of land for protection of wildlife and endangered species habitat and wildlife corridors and to provide future public use opportunities. State Parks awarded $57 million in outdoor equity program grants to advance the Outdoors for All initiative. 125 communities will receive funding, with LA County receiving $700,000 for the Watts Labor Community Action Committee outdoor program. And LA County Regional Park and Open Space District launched a second cycle of Measure A competitive grants to award $23 million for expansion and creation of new recreation programs. And finally, at the June 14th meeting a couple days ago, the Ocean Protection Council approved disbursement of funds to update the 2018 state sea level rise guidance and for a statewide vulnerability assessment of coastal habitats. And I'll end there. So thank you, everyone. And if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
If not, I will pass it back to the chair.
Thank you very much, Marissa. Now call on Tom Ford to provide a report as the SRA program director. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Charlie. Thanks, John, for that report. Thank you, Marissa. And thanks to TAC for getting together and working hard on that State of the Bay report, as well as the efforts of the executive committee the last month, putting together what I think is a pretty engaging agenda for this meeting. To build off of some of the things that you've already heard, and then fill in a couple other pieces for you. So we are continuing with the appropriations process at the federal level. We did receive support both from the House of Representatives and from the Senate for a full appropriation for the fully authorized amount for the National Estuary Program, which would, if it passes, plenty more to go. That would be $1 million a year for each of the 28 programs nationally, which would, you know, increase our annual funding based on our current levels by $250,000. So not an insignificant amount of money. Continuing to pay attention to those processes, interact with the other NEP directors around the country, and trying to make sure that we're providing any timely information for questions coming our way in that process. So our financial resources to advance our work here in town. As for the BIL funding, or the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, also known as the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, we are still awaiting guidance from the EPA on the parameters in which they expect us to identify projects and what benefits those investments would yield in our local environment. What I can share with you that I feel confident in, because it hasn't shifted over the past several months of conversations, is that we'll be looking towards achieving targets already identified in our Comprehensive Conservation and Management Plan, or our Comprehensive Monitoring Plan. We're focused on environmental justice issues and benefits to disadvantaged communities, and also with a tight focus on climate resilience. So trying to increase the adaptability of our natural systems to deal with sea level rise, coastal erosion, ocean acidification, other issues associated with climate change stressors. Water abundance in our streams, temperature, those flows, things like that would all be relevant. We're told that we should be expecting that guidance anytime soon. What we have started is some preliminary conversations of looking at potential projects that would fall into that, and we may have the opportunity to start bringing forward a list of potential projects to the executive committee and to the governing board in the coming months. Any questions about that before I move on to the next piece? Building off of Dr. Dorsey sharing some of the work that the TAC is undertaking, the Coastal Research Institute, a partnership that the Bay Foundation has established with the Seaver College of Science and Engineering at LMU, is working, and it's an intention to help inform a lot of these data gaps that we have. I'm glad I don't have to figure out the random stratified design for the bean clams. I'm going to leave that to John. But what we currently have in progress right now is continued research on harmful algal blooms in Santa Monica Bay, trying to figure out maybe what causes them to happen, their distribution, some of the other drivers, with an expectation, again, that our climate is changing, our waters are changing, and then that will likely affect the planktonic community to shift, and we want to be able to sort of get ahead of that and understand what we might be looking at in the future. Eelgrass, something that we're certainly very interested in. This is a true plant, a vascular plant with flowers and roots, and it grows underwater in sand and muddy habitats. It could be, and once was, far more expansive than it exists now in our bay. We also don't know a great deal about one of the species that occurs in our bay, and how it will again respond to some of these stressors that we anticipate with climate change. So we're doing some work to figure out where this stuff can grow, what types of light it needs, temperature, dissolved oxygen, a few other parameters, so we can start to make a better informed guess of where to look for it. And if we were to undertake further restoration of that community, then therefore prioritize places that we might. Mussels. So if amphipods and rack drive the train on the sandy shores, mussels are a very key structural living component of our rocky intertidal areas. The amount of heat that they are receiving and increased desiccation, drying out, is certainly something that can affect their survivability. So we've got some really exciting work being done to see at what temperatures and under what conditions we can actually measure the stress that those muscles are experiencing. This may help us understand potential losses of some species, uptick of other species moving into the area, largely migrating from the south or introduced species. So that's what's kind of happening on the science side of things right now, working towards not maybe this State of the Bay report, but future State of the Bay reports and information for our program. As for some work on the ground that's happening, it's boating season. Man, the water's flat. The wind's been nice and steady. The amount of sailboats out there has been tremendous. I'm glad to see everybody getting down to the coastline. So we trained over 100 dock walkers in the past few months. So these are folks that are volunteering their time to go around to their their neighbors on their docks. And say, hey, you know, here's clean boating, here's tools and resources so that you can operate your vessel cleanly, and where to discharge waste, what types of chemicals to use to clean the boat that are environmentally sensitive. So pleased to see those 100 folks getting out there. And we distributed 2,000 plus boater kits, which have the tools and resources for those. Folks can order those online, or we got those in the dock walker's hands so they can hand them directly to people. You've often heard me speak of our work with the Environmental Charter School System, and we've got a meeting later today to discuss some of the next steps with them, with their high school and their Table to Farm program. So exciting stuff happening there. If we're in the ocean, I'll go right to there. Teams diving today with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, outplanting a number of abalone that were measured and tagged and individually identified. I have to thank Marissa and Caitlin especially for making the time and coming down and helping with that effort. I think you came away with the same appreciation that many of us have that work with abalone. Never thought I would describe a snail as charismatic, but they are that. So very excited to see us progressing with those efforts to restore that very culturally significant and ecologically valuable species to our coastline. So as that effort continues, we'll continue to bring results back to this body and others to the success of those efforts. On the coastline and our interest in trying to enhance ecosystem services and the benefits to not just wildlife but also our community, the spot that I want to call out right now is one of our project sites off of Zuma Beach. So this is right neighboring where you would come into the big parking lot there. The sign says Zuma Lagoon, and we have vegetation now that's 2 years established, and it's gorgeous. So if you're looking at some of our other beach projects and other beach projects like the ones that we're involved with, this one should give you an idea of the trajectory where it's heading. So I have to thank LA County Beaches and Harbors, State Parks, Coastal Conservancy, Coastal Commission, City of Malibu, I hope I'm not leaving anybody out, for their efforts in order to try to establish that project. And I hope that the public that views that project starts to capture some of the beauty that our beaches don't have that they could have, as well as us learning from our monitoring as to how much sand we're actually accumulating, accreting, and retaining in place, again, to push back erosion, sea level rise. We got a lot more to go. So thank you for your attention. That's the extent of my report. And if there's any questions, I'll be happy to answer them if I can.
Thanks for the report, Tom. And I have a general question about the research and the actions of our programming and projects and so forth. Do we share that openly and aggressively with other NEP programs? I'm thinking particularly about the crisis that's in Florida right now, dealing with the eelgrass habitat that the manatees are in, and we're losing literally hundreds, if not thousands, of manatees in Florida. Our experience might be helpful in dealing with some of the issues that are facing the folks dealing with that manatee loss, largely because of cruise line impacts on the habitat areas there.
Thanks for the question, Dennis. So what I can say is generically, we, as NEP programs around the nation, interact about monthly within our association of directors. We meet twice a year formally with the EPA, as well as a tech transfer conference that we have in order to try to facilitate this dialogue. In this case, specific to Indian River Lagoon and the losses that they're seeing in eelgrass there and the impacts to the manatees, I was just there about a month and a half ago now, trying to assist them with their performance evaluation as a program to see how they're doing, and sat down with a lot of really terrific scientists who are trying to inform what's happening with the various species of eelgrass they have there, causes for its loss, opportunities for recovery, and how to interact and support the manatees, which are certainly seeing a very discrete problem with the loss of that foraging opportunity. We had maybe a few things to offer, but they're doing some really smart work down there, and I think maybe it was the other way around, and that I was going to school by visiting them there. The harmful algal blooms that had been very persistent in Lake Okeechobee and in the freshwater canal that delivers water in part to that system had resulted in very persistent algal blooms, which some of those species are certainly toxic, but by and large, what seemed to be the principal problem here is that once that algae started growing at the surface, absorbed or scattered the light, not enough light getting to the bottom for those grasses to persist. This is the first year in a while where they haven't seen that, and the waters are that stereotypical kind of crystal clear that we often associate with some Florida systems. The eelgrass will come bouncing back and some of these other species, and then we'll be on our way. But they're keeping a very close eye on it. Pleasure.
Any other questions? Your last statement was the clarity of the water this year compared to some previous years. They have a reason as to why they believe that is different this year?
It was largely relative to, if I've got the story straight, I'm not going to pretend to have expert knowledge of all the ins and outs, but they had some really big rain events in Florida that came at the right time of the year to then overwhelm the systems that are intended to manage the water flow in southern and southwestern Florida. So a lot of water moving into Lake Okeechobee, a lot of water having to move out of Lake Okeechobee, and very persistent nutrient pollution in those surface waters with groundwater influence that's also carrying some fairly elevated nutrient loads. So nutrient management, a key thing that a lot of people in this room spend a lot of time concerned about and trying to work on, and certainly we're seeing what can happen if you don't keep that under control, and Florida seems to be a very clear case of problems that can result.
Thank you, Tom.
Sure.
Any other questions for Tom? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Next item on the agenda is the item 3A, consideration of approval of the February 17th, 2022 Governing Board meeting minutes.
Can I just interject, Chair? We have item 2E, reports from members.
Ah, very good.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Marissa. This is an opportunity for the members here to share work that their organizations have been doing to forward the conservation management plan goals and activities. Have anything you'd like to share on a project that your agency is working on? Yes.
I'm actually just going to share a couple of upcoming events that Heal the Bay is working on. This Saturday we have a doubleheader. We actually have our regular monthly Nothing But Sand cleanup. Those have been reinstated in person for quite some time now. We've had some really inspirational turnout for all of those events. And we're doing it again this Saturday. Simultaneously, we will also be hosting our annual Nick Gabaldon Day event, celebrating Nick Gabaldon as a renowned surfer of color, and helping to teach younger folks in Los Angeles
how to surf, and prior to that also how to swim if they do not have that skill. So we're really excited about both of those events this Saturday. And then also next week, on June 22nd, we will be releasing our annual beach report card. And on the same day, we will also be releasing our separate river report card. So assessing water quality at hundreds of beaches along the West Coast and also various recreational freshwater sites in the Los Angeles area. So thanks.
Thank you. The other reports.
I don't want to preempt anything on the agenda today, but there is an opportunity for all of us to see what will happen with the restoration of Topanga Lagoon and the coastal environment. The Conservation District is actually in active participation with many agencies dealing with the issues there. I think, Rosie, you might be talking about that today as well. So I would just say that when SMBRC has an opportunity to come together and deal with something really significant like that, Malibu Lagoon or Ringe Dam or Pure Water, all those things are so significant to us. It's good to raise them up out of, you know, just an agenda discussion to consciousness about all the things that each of us and our agencies and organizations can do to facilitate those programs that the SMBRC is significant in aiding and abetting, I'll say in that way. But thank you for the opportunity to just make everybody aware of those programs.
Report. Oh, Steve.
You folks may be aware of this. I learned the other day that State Parks received like a $12 million grant to plan to take down Ringe Dam. News to me. So they're out right now trying to get some skilled people to develop the plan and get that done. So that'll be interesting.
Thank you, Steve. Martha.
So I want to report on one of our action. I forget what number it is, but it's the one about maximizing recycling. We have a partnership with the Metropolitan Water District to take flow from our joint water pollution control plant that's currently going to the ocean. We're operating a demonstration plant, and last month the governor came to visit. Governor Newsom came to visit our facility in Carson and visited the demonstration plant, and basically as an example on how to provide additional water resources. And so we're actually looking at an opportunity, hopefully a funding for early start, early delivery projects, which can potentially provide, water supplies. We're doing indirect potable reuse, groundwater recharge, but there is the potential for direct potable reuse. So we're very excited about that.
Martha, that's really good news. What's the projection for an early start date if you've got money and support?
So I know the governor mentioned something about 2027, 2028 delivery, but we are actually looking at something within 5 years. So, I mean, it's basically 2027, looking at opportunities close to the plant in Carson that could provide water for industrial purposes, for groundwater recharge. So short is 5 years, but it does, you'll have to build the advanced treatment facilities and then conveyance. But, we're excited. We're going to try to do things as quickly as possible. We're currently in the environmental planning stage. The notice of preparation is scheduled to go out September, early fall timeline, with a draft EIR next year.
Thank you very much, Martha. That's really good news. Anybody else have something to share on this agenda? Yes, Rory.
Yes, just to remind everyone, the Conservancy still has some wildfire resiliency funding that we can distribute. In fact, City of Malibu will have another hazardous tree removal grant on our June 27th agenda. We've been stressing ignition prevention, and some of the grants already out there are for monitoring and limiting illegal campfires in open space areas, tree planting, a lot of oak tree planting going on, and exotic grass removal, structure hardening. So there's a whole panoply of proposals that we've already funded, and we'd be happy to entertain others. And then on another topic, as far as the wildlife bridge, the underway is a native plant garden, or rather nursery operation that we're supporting next to the firehouse on Las Virgenes Road. And that's being undertaken through National Wildlife Federation, National Park Service, and MRCA. We'll be growing plants that will be planted on the overcrossing and on the approaches once it's ready for that.
Thank you very much. I will share that Las Virgenes Municipal Water District has replaced about 75% of the 20,000 water meters and replaced them with a new technology meter that can be read automatically. And it reports wirelessly on water use hour by hour by customer. And it's been very effective at helping our water customers reduce their losses due to leaks. One of our customers' children cracked open a hose bib, and it was in a part of the yard that wasn't immediately visible. Not a lot of flow, but it was some gallons per hour, and the water district was able to contact that customer after 16 hours of continued use. That's an abnormal pattern of water use, and found it in 5 minutes and turned it off. We've had that same experience with business customers, not recognizing that their water bill is high because of a mainline leak. And these are issues that are really valuable in conserving water. We are thrilled that many of our customers are also taking advantage of a water smart portal that allows them to access that meter information on a real-time basis. So customers that are getting high water bills, finding that their systems are, in some cases, need maintenance. And this is an item that has not made it to their level of consciousness. But with the strict use reductions adopted, they're really getting serious about paying attention to how they use that water. And very gratifying. We have good expectations, but the pain of water use reductions has yet to really hit, and it'll hit August. Please, that customers are getting good information and making good use of it.
Thank you, Charlie. I have a report on a CCMP action item 43 report, and it will tie into agenda item 4A for this morning. Our Safe Clean Water team will be presenting on the suite of projects for the Stormwater Investment Plan that has been approved by the various watershed area steering committees for the Safe Clean Water Program. And the second item is that the Flood Control District, in partnership with the Ocean Cleanup, a Dutch nonprofit, is working towards deployment of a trash interceptor at the mouth of Bayona Creek to help capture and contain trash and prevent it from polluting our beaches and keeping our shoreline clean.
Thank you. Anyone else? We'll move on to the next agenda item, which is minutes from February 17th governing board meeting. Anyone have any changes proposed? Seeing none, I'll make a motion and a second to approve the minutes as published. Thank you, Dennis.
Second.
Thank you, Carl, for providing a second. Would you call the roll vote, please?
Certainly. Let me just share the screen. Abby Austin?
Yes.
Thank you. Jonathan Bishop?
Yes.
Thank you. Jay Caldwell?
Yes.
Thank you. Mark Caspery?
Yes.
Thank you. Tessa Chernofsky?
Yes.
Thank you. Megan Cooper?
Yes.
Thank you. Christy Kern?
Yes.
Thank you. Avnina Moni McMorrin?
Yes.
Thank you. Annalisa Moe?
I will actually abstain since I was not in attendance.
Thank you. Maura Monaghan?
I'll also abstain since I wasn't there.
Thank you. And Lynn?
Yes.
Thank you. Andy Rodriguez?
I was not present.
Thank you. Thursday? Noel Pashian?
Yes.
Thank you. Martha Tremblay?
Yes.
Stephen Ehring?
Yes.
Thank you. Dennis Washburn?
Yes.
Thank you. And Jeff Wilson?
Yes.
Thank you. The motion is approved. The April 21st meeting minutes are approved. Thank you.
Very much. Next item on the agenda is item 4A, presentation on the State Clean Water Program fiscal year 2022. And 2023 stormwater watershed. Provide a staff report on this.
Yes, thank you, Chair and Governing Board members. So, Commission staff distributed a staff report last week to provide background information on the Safe Clean Water Program and summaries of the program's new proposed projects within the Santa Monica Bay watershed. This item consists of a presentation from County Public Works staff on the Safe Clean Water Program's fiscal year 22-23 Stormwater Investment Plans, or SIPs. And these are annual five-year plans that recommend funding for projects across the program's nine watershed areas. Just as a reminder, implementation of the Safe Clean Water Program is action number 43 of our NEP strategic plan, the CCMP Action Plan. And in 2020 and 2021, the Governing Board adopted recommendations supporting the program's first and second rounds of funding for projects in our watershed. Our past practice has been to present on the content of the SIPs and bring a resolution before the Governing Board in the same meeting. But this year, we separated these two items to first have a presentation on those projects, and then have the Governing Board's consideration of resolution at a separate meeting anticipated in August. So this was recommended by county staff as the best timing for the Board of Supervisors' consideration of SIP approval, which is expected this October. We also hope it'll give members more time to review the project, digest the information before action is requested. So today's presentation covers the Safe Clean Water Program's North, Central, and South Santa Monica Bay watershed areas. The presentation includes the full South Santa Monica Bay watershed area. So this watershed area includes a portion of our Santa Monica Bay watershed and the Dominguez Channel watershed. And this can be seen in attachment one of the staff report. So our staff report only focuses on those projects within the watershed, our Santa Monica Bay watershed boundary, and those project summaries can be found in attachment two. So again, no action is requested of the Governing Board for this meeting. Following the presentation, members can discuss and comment on the preferred content of a resolution of the projects in our watershed. Commission staff will then draft a staff report and resolution for the Governing Board's consideration. Again, that's anticipated for the next Governing Board meeting in August. And we'll be sure to share a copy of the county staff slides following the meeting. So with that, now I will turn it over to Kirk Allen, Senior Civil Engineer with LA County Public Works, to present on the Safe Clean Water Program. Kirk, just give me 1 second to share your slides, please.
Okay, can you give me a quick, can you give me a quick mic check, Caitlin?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, perfect. So, all right, thank you, Caitlin, and good morning to everyone with us today. Hope everyone is doing well. At Public Works, I manage at the staff level implementation efforts that have put this program into motion. Glad to be with you this morning and cover the Safe Clean Water Program regional update on investments underway in the Bay watershed areas. Next slide. For a decade or more, the county was planning for a regional solution to address stormwater issues at the regional level. Through multiple attempts, the Safe Clean Water Program became a reality in 2019 once Measure W was passed by voters. The program is propped up on three main goals: addressing water quality, water supply, and doing so in a way that enhances our communities. The three actions underscored in this approach taken to capture, clean, and conserve our local water resources. Next slide. We all know numerous challenges surround water resiliency. These will only grow as climate models are predicting more extreme weather cycles. It has been long understood that stormwater is an underutilized resource, and its increased utilization would provide opportunity to help establish more water resiliency. But of all the water resources available in the region's portfolio, stormwater lacked a sufficient and dedicated funding source. Regional level funding was absent. Funding at the regional level would provide for strategic investments for coordination amongst the regional players. It was also understood water governance in LA County was fractured, with more than 200 water agencies each serving a single function and ran by independent boards. The flood control protection system designed and built in the 40s and 50s has done an outstanding job of managing flood risk within the LA Basin, but it was never designed to handle the pollutants we see in our waterways today. Next slide. As part of a regional approach, watershed areas were developed in this program, blending the needs of physical watershed management, but also the political geography of municipalities and county boundaries. Next slide. 50% of the taxes generated in the Safe Clean Water Program are for, in a watershed area, are returned for utilization in the regional program for investment into multi-benefit projects. The table here shows the allocations into the three Bay watershed areas. You can see that Central and South Santa Monica Bay both get an annual return of around $17 million, with North Santa Monica Bay coming in just under $2 million, for a total allotment of $37 million that can be programmed into projects on an annual basis. Next slide. One of the eligibility checks for infrastructure program projects is their associated score on the five categories listed here, A through E. You can see that scoring is weighted heavily for water quality, followed by water supply, nature-based solutions, community investment benefits, and also points attainable through leverage and funds and community support. And the primary purpose of having a 60-point threshold score is to arrive at a point where projects are deemed of sufficient size to deliver on regional benefits. A higher score does not necessarily mean a project is better. It's just a perspective to keep on how that project is eligible for consideration for the infrastructure program. Next slide. And as part of the technical resources program, we have what's called watershed coordinators. And the Bay watershed areas have four in total. Central Santa Monica Bay has two. Due to population size in the Central Santa Monica Bay watershed area. So these are four individuals that are good to know. Their contact information and email is here. We also have a full roster of the watershed coordinators on our website. If you have ideas, they are great first points of contact to reach out to, and they can help orient others to potential resources available through the program and, you know, building inclusion and meaningful engagement in the pursuit of safe clean water program goals. Next slide. So board approval of these stormwater investment plans is expected to occur in the fall of each year. Board approval of fiscal year 22-23 stormwater investment plans, or year three, is anticipated to be in early October. And I like to think of the annual cycle under the regional program as having three main phases. The first phase is a call for project phase. The second phase is the stormwater investment plan programming phase. That's where projects are selected. They're presented to these steering committees, these governance committees, and ultimately recommended into these plans, which end up getting adopted by the Board of Supervisors on an annual basis. To help shape and inform this process, we have developed ongoing interim guidance. The 2022 interim guidance includes areas on strengthening community engagement and support, more guidance on water supply and programming of nature-based solutions, and then also implementing disadvantaged community policies as part of the program. And these all help shape and inform ongoing call for projects, and in particular, year four call for projects. So adaptive management is a goal of the program and will be ongoing as the program matures. Next slide, please. So this workflow, I know it's a busy chart here, incorporates an extensive and collaborative regional governance process. Committees include municipalities, a diverse group of agencies from sanitation to parks, and also community stakeholders in these watershed area steering committees that include environmental reps, business reps, and environmental justice representatives. So the steering committees, there are nine steering committees consisting of 17 members. They are the ones who select projects from complete feasibility studies that have scored 60 points. The scored projects for project feasibility studies, once they meet 60 points, they are eligible for funding. And that score is validated from the scoring committee. And there are six individuals who are considered subject matter experts that help score the infrastructure projects, and they provide those scores back for the WAS for consideration. And then one of the final legs in approving or recommending a stormwater investment plan, it needs to go through our regional oversight committee, and that committee is meeting this afternoon. For those that are interested, it starts at 1, and meeting information is on our website. But the regional oversight committee consists of 9 subject matter experts. They review the SIPs and see that the SIPs are achieving Safe Clean Water Program goals, and they provide findings and recommendations either back to the WASCs or recommendations to the board for approval of those stormwater investment plans. And again, there's a big bar at the bottom highlighting our watershed coordinators. They are a vital resource, for the regional program and the program at large. And their duties center around, connecting potential applicants with technical resources and building inclusion in a meaningful engagement in pursuit of Safe Clean Water Program goals. Next slide, please. So regional investments in the regional program fall into 3 sub-programs. On the left side of there, these 3 programs do have allocation limits. The infrastructure program in these stormwater investment plans must be at least 80% of the available funds. The technical resources program can utilize up to 10% of the available budget, and the scientific studies program can use up to 5%. And these allocation limits are required by ordinance. So the stormwater investment plans include recommendations for the upcoming SIP, and SIPs include a 5-year plan, which includes 1 year of recommended budget plus projected recommendations for subsequent 4 years. And the table above showcases the investments or projections for the Central Santa Monica Bay. So in the infrastructure program, there are 12 projects anticipated to receive $76 million. There are 3 TRP project concepts recommended for funding to date. And there are 2 watershed coordinator positions with their corresponding budget, and 2 scientific studies for around $600,000. Next slide, please. So in North Santa Monica Bay, that's the watershed that doesn't, that has the smallest allocation of funds. It currently has two infrastructure projects, either receiving funds or anticipated to receive funds after year three stormwater investment plans are approved. It has recommended one technical or project concept to be developed into a feasibility study, which is underway currently, and has one watershed coordinator. And they are also recommending one scientific study this year, the regional pathogen study, and for a total of four recommendations to date, for a total allocation of around $2 million to date. Next slide, please. And the third slide here is for our South Santa Monica Bay stormwater investment plan. In total, there are, have been 11 infrastructure projects recommended for a total of around $76 million. There have been six TRP project concepts recommended for $1.8 million to date, and it has one full-time watershed coordinator. And as far as scientific studies, they have recommended three studies to date for around $1.4 million for a total of 20 applications to date in the South Santa Monica Bay. So next slide, please. So this slide here includes hyperlinks to all the new infrastructure projects coming through in year three stormwater investment plans. And these budgets are expected to be approved by the board in October this fall. But if you would like to know more information, you know, click on these links. It will take you to the application to learn more about what these projects are proposing and, you know, gives you an idea of who's pursuing funds in the Bay watershed areas and is receiving funds. Next slide, please. So the two other subcategories of the regional program are the Technical Resources Program and the Scientific Studies Program. So under the TRP, there are three that are looking to get funding for development of a complete feasibility study, one in Central and two in South Santa Monica Bay. And then as far as scientific studies programs, applications or proposals received this year, there are three listed here. The microplastics in LA County is actually being funded by both Central and South, but that is the same study. So these three studies will be recommended for approval this fall at the Board of Supervisors. And upon that approval, you know, they were into transfer agreements, and these investments will be put to work in the efforts described in their proposals. Next slide, please. So recent interim guidance was released to help project developers and Safe Clean Water Program committees and the public understand how nature-based solutions can be matched with the needs and benefits. If a community has a need, nature-based solutions can be considered as the correct tool for meeting that need and achieving benefits. Next slide. All recommended year three infrastructure projects are proposing nature-based solutions. They're accomplishing this by utilizing natural materials and mimicking natural processes as a means and methods to accomplish benefits. So all eight. So next slide. So these next three slides are watershed specific. They provide a snapshot of the five scoring categories for new infrastructure projects by watershed area. That graph on the left side of the slide is more of a qualitative perspective on how that project scored and where it is pursuing benefits from a scoring perspective. So for collectively for the three projects in Central Santa Monica Bay, you can see it's, you know, very strong in water quality. You know, they all incorporate nature-based solutions. They all have community investment benefits associated with them. It does lack a water supply benefits just due to its geography and location, but it is leveraging funds. So, you know, a lot of good anticipated benefits are expected from those three projects. Those projects are aiming to manage around 1,300 acres of drainage area, potentially adding 82 acre feet. of 24-hour stormwater capture capacity and potentially around 330 acre-feet of annual average stormwater capture. So next slide, please. So this slide is for North Santa Monica Bay Infrastructure Program projects. Liberty Canyon is a design-only application being proposed for year three. It is proposing to manage around 42 acres of drainage area and has requested $100,000 from the North Santa Monica Bay. So next slide. So, and our last slide here for South Santa Monica Bay Infrastructure Program projects. You can see again, it is very strong in water quality, incorporates nature-based solutions, is driving forward more community investments, again, lacks water supply, but is leveraging a great deal of funds to bring these projects forward. So in total, around $6 million is being pursued, and those projects are looking to manage around 850 acres of drainage area and adding around 9 acre-feet of storage capacity once those projects are built and put into operation. So we can move on to the last slide. So again, I just want to remind folks that the Safe Clean Water Program is a forever tax. We collect around $280 million each year, and that's a big deal. We just ask that everyone stay involved. There's many steps in this process, so it's important to stay engaged early and often. You can always learn more about the Safe Clean Water Program, its projects, benefits, and expenditures on the program website and the Safe Clean Water Portal. We are protecting public health and our environment while maximizing a cleaner and more locally controlled water supply. So that, Commission, will conclude my slides for today. But if there are questions, I will attempt to answer those. If not, thank you for your time and attention.
Kirk, thank you very much for a great presentation. Any questions? Dennis.
Thank you for the presentation. And can you give us an update, or might you be able to help us get an update on the amount of, I guess, resources or revenues that have been generated by Measure W over the period of time that we've had Measure W in place? I think we're going on 5 years now. So there's a sales tax that's at least 20 years long, I think, maybe longer. And it's generating a lot of money, and it's also generating a lot of potential partnerships and collaborations from other agencies that are aligning their funds with the effort to try to not only clean up our water, but provide us with the appropriate water supply. Are you able to give us some indication of how much has been collected and what we anticipate in the way of revenues out of Measure W for future budgeting purposes and our planning?
Yeah, I could just generally speak to that. Safe Clean Water has collected 2 full years of revenue. Even though it passed in 2019, the first tax year was 2019-2020 tax year. So we have collected 2 full years, and that collection has been right around $282 million each year. This is a secure property tax, so we expect this tax to be consistent from year to year. So after final accounting in year three, we will have received, close to, I want to say, $840 million to date. And that is split up not just amongst the regional program, but also amongst the municipal program, which receives 40%, which goes back to our cities, and 10%, which is delegated to the district program. So I can follow up with Caitlin and share some of the collected revenue resources. We do have that posted on our website, but perhaps we can provide an update to you in the future, summing that up for you.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you, Charlie. Kirk, congratulations on the program's initial 2-year success. Remind me, is the credit incentive percentage allocations a part of the review mechanism that occurs? I think it's 5 or every 7 years.
The credit review, I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
The credit
the credits that were generated, the credit allocation percentages for the various components of the program for business stakeholders against their property tax payments. There was a really good, robust discussion about you could get 10% credit toward off your property tax payment for different allocations as part of the stewardship. You showed that slide early on, and I know there was a really good, robust discussion in the conceptualization of the program. Question is, can you remind me, is that percentage, are those percentages for the various program credit incentives something that's reviewed?
Yes, we have what's called the credit program, and if you've installed stormwater BMPs on your property, you can get a credit back to your parcel tax, a reduction in it up to, I want to say 85%, and I believe we've had around 20 or so credit applications come through. Primarily, they have been the large refineries in the Bay areas that have pursued the credit program, and some of the large landowners. So that credit program is being pursued. I don't have a total on what's being pursued and credited back to those parcels, but I could definitely follow up with a little bit more information on the credit program and highlight some of the successes there.
Kirk, I appreciate it. And just the point was, it was a tremendous opportunity for a competitive incentive amongst large business stakeholders for individuals that have made hundreds of millions of dollars of capital investments proactively, to enhance and encourage stormwater capture treatment. I just encourage that the credit program stays intact, because I do think it is generating some at-will compliance outside of any kind of a other mechanism. So it was a very good part of the program. So thank you.
Thank you very much. That's a good observation. A lot of private money has gone into building solutions to meet the goals of the Measure W stormwater program. Any other questions? On the presentation by Kirk? Yes.
Yeah, a couple of comments, and I'd like to start by saying thank you to Kirk and the team at the county for all of the work over the last few years on this program, as well as anybody who serves on a WASC. It's a lot of work and a lot of responsibility, and really want to thank everybody for their time and expertise. One comment that I'll make is about incorporating public opinion more into the process. Part of that is we do have community seats on each of the WASCs. Although those community seats are still in the minority as 5 of 15 seats. And in any case possible, if one of those members wants to have further discussion about any particular project, space should be made for that discussion. And I fully understand that there is a timeline in getting through discussions and getting the SIPs approved. But it's also very important that even if just one member of a committee wants to discuss a project, that there be space made for that. And another way that the public can get involved is just through public comment. And I also think that there are additional ways for those voices to be uplifted further. One example that I'll give is in the South Santa Monica Bay, there was a project proposed by Tree People, and there was public support for that scientific study. It was not included in the SIP, which is not the issue here. I think there's plenty of room for intelligent people to disagree in any one subject, so not expecting the SIP to go ahead and approve that scientific study. But there was no discussion about it, regardless of the public support for it. So I feel like in that situation, perhaps the county could play a bit of a role to help facilitate a discussion if there is a difference of opinion coming from the public. One last question that I do have for Kirk, unless you'd like to also respond to those comments, is just an update on the education program as part of the program as well.
Yeah, as far as the education program, I can definitely follow up with you, Annalise, to give you a little bit more detail on that effort. And we are planning to meet with the Our Water Coalition in August to give you a more robust update on the district education program. but we are continuing to plan and strategize with resources and contracts to develop those programs and bring those, into reality and put those into motion. So more will need to be followed up on that, Annalise, but we will be providing a direct update to the Our Water LA coming up in August about those efforts for the district ed.
I appreciate that, Kirk. Look forward to it.
Thank you very much, Kong.
Kirk, thank you for the excellent presentation. To answer Dennis's question with regards to funds that are allocated for the North Central and South Santa Monica Bay Watershed Area Steering Committee for the infrastructure program, that the combined allocation for the Safe Clean Water Program is approximately $28 million. I serve as the district's representative on the North Central, on the North, which is chaired by Dave Peterson of First Virginia Central. Marissa is also on the Central Santa Monica Bay Watershed, and then the South. But the North is allocated approximately $1.8 million. The Central Santa Monica Bay Watershed is $17.8 million, and the South is approximately $18.4 million for a regional infrastructure program project. And then it addressed Lisa's question. All of WAS, the challenge and the task with all of the WAS members is to try to approve and advance projects and stormwater investment plans that meet the needs of the WAS. And unfortunately, there are rival projects that do not get recommended for approval, but we do encourage the participant and applicants to continue to move forward with the future SIPs. The next call for projects is due July 31st, so we recommend and encourage you to continue to apply for SIPs and water projects. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? And thank you, Kirk. We will be considering a resolution to support these projects August meeting. Item on the agenda, I think, is 5-minute break. Meeting is called back to order. Next item on our agenda for today is a presentation from the newest Technical Advisory Committee member, our Rosie Daggett, with the Resource Conservation District of the Santa Monica Mountains. Please come up. We have...
Actually, Charlie, while she's getting settled, I just want to say a couple of things, if you both don't mind. I'm just really excited to have our new Technical Advisory Committee member presenting today. Many of you know her, so you know how lucky you are to have her experience and local expertise. Her experience is extremely extensive, and there's not enough time to cover it, so I'm going to summarize. Since 1987, Rosie has coordinated much-needed research, monitoring, and restoration throughout the Santa Monica Mountains, nearly all of which directly overlaps with the SMBRC Comprehensive Conservation and Management Plan, goals, and actions. She played a formative role in the Topanga Creek Watershed Committee, and as project manager worked on restoration of Lower Topanga Creek and currently Topanga Lagoon planning. Other work includes coordinating volunteer water quality monitoring, vegetation and sensitive species survey, monitoring of steelhead trout, tidewater gobies and amphibians, and lots of work on coast live oaks and their role in ecosystem integrity. She's had many positive impacts in the watershed, and I'm a big fan, as you can tell, so I will turn it over to Rosie to highlight some of her recent work for you.
Thank you so much, Marissa, and good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for inviting me to speak today. I was really honored and touched to be invited to participate formally on the TAC. I am amazed at the amount of incredible experience, expertise, and learning and incredible enthusiasm that your TAC brings to trying to keep the Santa Monica Bay going. And I'm really grateful to be part of that in a more formal way going forward. So when Marissa approached me, she said, well, I want you to like introduce yourself to the TAC. And I thought, that's kind of dull. So rather than speak about myself, I'd rather speak about how the Resource Conservation District of the Santa Monica Mountains and the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission share a lot of similar missions and have important goals and objectives that are in alignment. So next slide, please. So I went to the Conservation Management Plan, and these four topics really rose to the surface for me as how important ways that the RCD has been able to connect with, support the mission of the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission. And I think it's important to note, for those of you who don't know, that resource conservation districts are found in every state in the union. We are a non-regulatory state agency under the Resources Code in the state of California, but our mission is to provide natural resources management information to all of our constituents. And the way our constituents are identified is geographically. And so the Santa Monica Mountains is a unique RCD in that we're a wildland interface zone primarily with a lot of urban influences into our natural spaces. And so that makes us somewhat unique. Most RCDs are a little bit more agriculturally oriented and focused. But what that does is, for someone like me, gives me free rein to allow my curiosity to just go. And one of the things that has kept me for 35 years at the RCD is the fact that any brain-damaged idea I come up with, if I can figure out how to fund it, the RCD has been supportive of it. And what that's led to is a lot of really interesting ways to think about projects and problems in the Santa Monica Mountains. So I'm really a place-based biologist, despite my 21 years in Antarctica, which some of you guys know about. I would kind of like take a little hiatus every year for 2 months to work down there. But one of the things that's been really important to me about the work that the RCD does is that it is really focused in problem solving and then taking information that we collect on the ground and using it to inform our management decisions and how we think about the world. Next, please. So I want to start with a question to you all. Why do fish need trees? Oh, come on. Who's got an idea? The roots, what do the roots do? Spoken as a true engineer. So it stabilizes all those banks, right? The roots keep the banks in place and allow us to create stream corridors that are functional. What else do trees do for us? Shade, important. You notice everyone fights over the one shady parking spot in any lot that you ever go to. And this is incredibly important in the Santa Monica Mountains, where temperature parameters are changing all the time. And having shade in our streams is really critical. What's the last really important thing that trees do for our streams? Photosynthesis, absolutely. So the leaves and the energy that are generated by the trees provide enormous amounts of ecosystem services. And when you look at it in the context of the stream corridors in particular, one of the real benefits of the ecosystem services we get from trees is that they drop their leaves. And those leaves start to decompose and become important substrate for all kinds of critters that everybody else needs. So it's the bottom of the trophic level. It's a nutrient recycling. And so trees really connect all the pieces. And the reason I wanted to start with that framework is because I've been asked to help on your TAC looking specifically at freshwater ecosystems. And what's really important is that we remember that the mountains connect to the sea. And one of the things that's so interesting about the Santa Monica Mountains is that we have all these 28 coastal watersheds. All of them have the mountains going down to the sea. And so those stream corridors that make the connections are really critical. Next, please. So with that, I went to your plan and I said, all right, what are the specific action items that we've been involved in trying to address? So the Malibu Creek Ecosystem Restoration Program was earlier mentioned, that the state parks just got $12 million to advance this project into the final design stage. The RCD has been working with state parks for a very, very, very long time on this project. Talk about multi-year efforts to get to where we are today. Part of our work has been doing actual on-the-ground snorkel surveys, which we conducted monthly from 2005 till 2018 when our funding ran out. But we've just received funding again, so we'll be initiating those starting again in this fall. And these snorkel surveys provide really key information, eyes on the ground. What does it look like? When do things dry out? Where do they dry out? How important is it for us to understand what these flow connectivities are? Next, please. Removing stream barriers is another important thing, which once we get Ringe Dam down, that gives us another 3.5, 4 miles right away of great habitat accessibility to the steelhead. But if we continue upstream and we take out the other 26 or 27 barriers that are upstream of Malibu Ringe Dam into the connecting into the tributaries, we could get over 16 more miles of habitat. So removing these barriers becomes really critical. And the ones, the two that we've been really involved with in the past were the removal of the Rodeo Grounds berm in Lower Topanga State Park in 2008. We took out 1,934 20-ton truckloads of crap that had been dumped into the creek and restored a 12-acre floodplain there. And then the Arizona crossings in Arroyo Siquit, the RCD was critical in supporting state parks in helping them doing all the in-stream assessments. So while state parks did all the tough work of infrastructure change, we were helping on the ground with some of the background biological assessments. And restoring coastal lagoons. So there are so many that need our help. Over 95% of our coastal ecosystems, as you all know, have gone the way of the dodo in the Santa Monica Bay. And we did such a great job in Malibu, getting Malibu back and functional. Now it's time to address some of the other sites that are of concern. And what's great is that Big Sycamore, which is at the northernmost end of the bay, that bridge is totally threatened by coastal erosion right now. We don't have to wait for any more sea level rise. It's already a problem here. And this is a great opportunity where Caltrans is going to have to replace that bridge. And so they are working with state parks to try to figure out a plan to coordinate lagoon restoration with that bridge replacement. And the RCD's role in this is that we have been monitoring this lagoon since 2005, and we were able to document the colonization by tidewater gobies in 2013. And everybody was so excited that we got gobies in Big Sycamore. The problem was is then it dried up because 2013 was the beginning of the multi-year drought. And so, of course, the tidewater gobies didn't make it. But that doesn't mean that they couldn't come back. And so it would be really nice to get that project going. We were just talking about Trancas Lagoon and what's going on here. In 2015, the RCD completed a study that suggested that if we replaced this aging bridge that's falling apart with a newer bridge that had a 240-foot span, this one I think is like 100-foot span, so it's twice as big. What would happen is that we'd be able to achieve a number of multi-benefit goals. One, we could create a pedestrian undercrossing so that people didn't have to go running across PCH on a busy weekend because they wanted to get from Zuma Beach over to the Trancas Market or Starbucks. They could go safely underneath, and we could create a trail system through a restored lagoon. So Caltrans went through their study. They actually are starting construction as we speak and replacing that bridge. Unfortunately, the landowner on the northeast corner of the property has not really wanted to be engaged. So we're still working on the lagoon restoration piece of this, and hopefully that will come to fruition. Upstream connectivity, if we get through the LA County flood control channels that are just upstream of the lagoon area, that gets us into the complete National Park Service preserved upper watershed of Trancas, which is has tremendous habitat and a lot of potential there. So this is a high priority project. Next. Last but not least is Topanga Lagoon. And Topanga is the third largest watershed that drains into the Santa Monica Bay. It's one of the least altered watersheds. We still have 28 of the 31 potential amphibian and reptile species. We've got all of the native fishes that used to be there or should be there. The problem is that that lagoon that you can see has been constrained on all four quadrants by 30 feet of fill that was put in the 1930s when PCH was realigned and that 79-foot bridge was installed. And what's happened is that the steelhead trout have really, really narrow windows of opportunity to get into or out of the lagoon because that narrow constrained mouth functions like a fire hose. So when we get good storms, which could, you know, facilitate migration, instead of being able to come in and out over a long duration of time, it's a really short time period that the flows fall down enough that the fish can either get in or get out. And so we've got a huge restoration project going here. The scoping meeting for the start of the CEQA process was last Saturday. As Marissa mentioned, we are still accepting comments until the 22nd. And if you haven't gone to Google Topanga Lagoon Restoration, which will take you to our website, I encourage you to do so whenever you're depressed and need a smile, because the music video that we prepared for this is typically Topanga, so you can expect costumes and dancing, but it's actually a really nice way to look at the collaboration between the Native American Gabriele Notonga, who participated in the development of the song and the video. So I hope you get a chance to look at that sometime. Thanks. So I won't get into more on the wildlife crossings because you guys have gotten very involved in that, other than to say that it's not just Liberty Canyon. There are other ways that we need to be getting our animals to and from. And so Clark Stevens and I worked very closely with a variety of other folks to try to think about how do we expand the linkages, not only for large charismatic species like our mountain lions, but how do we do it for the steelhead trout, for the turtles, for the frogs, for the other smaller species that don't get as much, you know, airtime because they're not as charismatic, but are equally as important and have big roles to play. So the linkage, the wildlife linkage is in process, and there's a lot going on. Oh, thank you so much. And I hope that you guys, you know, pay attention to that. It's a little far afield from the coast, but once again, connectivity is important no matter where it is, and ultimately it all gets back to the coast as well. Next, please. Enhancing species that are endangered or rare. So the RCD, I've been, I'm an old fish nerd, have been a fish nerd my whole life. So studying steelhead trout and doing snorkel surveys every month since 2001 has been one of the joys of my life. It's so interesting to get a chance to see the world sort of through the eyes of a fish as you snorkel with them. And because of the pattern of flow and in and out flow in Topanga Creek and in Malibu as well, there's a lot of fish that end up staying in the creek and not migrating. And so month after month, you go back and it's the same fish in the same pool. So you kind of get to know them. And the ones in Topanga, we actually did mark recapture for 10 years. And a lot of those fish were, you know, 6 and 7 years old by the time we finally lost track of them. So that work is still continuing, and that work is being translated into a new project. Steelhead trout are in bad shape in the southern distinct population segment. And from 1994 to 2020, there were 177 anadromous adults seen from Santa Maria Creek at the border with the Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo County, all the way to the ocean. So 25 years, 500 kilometers of coastline, more or less, 177 individuals. I would say that's pretty endangered. And of the populations that were resident in upper watersheds that are the source populations, many of those were burned out in either the Thomas or the Woolby fire. So we're really at a crossroads of trying to come up with some very important, directed, prioritized actions to take to try to restore the species, because they're the most temperature tolerant. And if we have any hope of having steelhead trout into the future, all the way up the coast into Alaska, which is part of their range ultimately, these guys are the ones who can follow those temperature changes and withstand them. So preserving that genetic biodiversity is critical. And likewise with the tidewater gobies, they're listed as critically endangered. You can barely see that little itty-bitty tiny fish. That when they're fully grown, they're like the size of my thumb. They're not very big, but they're very cute. And they're really an important intertidal brackish water species. They blink in and out because they're very responsive to the changes in lagoon environments. But right now, there aren't very many lagoons where they're present at all. And when we reintroduced them at the RCD in 1991 into Malibu Lagoon, they were actually able to, by themselves, migrate down and colonize Topanga Lagoon by 2000. And so now we've got a booming population in Topanga Lagoon that wasn't there before. And the population in Malibu Lagoon has been in decline since 2005. So we're working with state parks and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to take some of the Topanga fish and put them back in Malibu so that we can restock and support the Malibu population. Next. I just wanted to bring up the turtles because a long time back, and some of you have been here long enough that you might remember this, I gave a presentation to you guys like in 2000 or 2001. And the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission and the Coastal Conservancy gave me a small grant to start working on this real small population of western pond turtles, which are a species of special concern in the state of California. And then you fast forward to 2009, and in collaboration with the National Parks and State Parks, we did a study looking at all throughout the Santa Monica Mountains. We went back to all 36 areas where turtles had been found in the mid-80s to see if they were still there. There were only 8 places left where turtles were present. And of those 8 places, 4 of them were burned in the Woolby fire. So this summer, we're going to be going back and repeating those surveys to see if and where turtles are still happening. But I also want to call up and thank, and you can sort of not really see it too well, but there are people standing on top of that rock. And thanks to the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy, who own this property that you see in the picture, this is a reserve area, and they gave us a grant to put in a water delivery service for the turtles, because these turtles can only eat and reproduce if they're in water. And so we, with a team of volunteers and the funding that created the basis to purchase all the materials, we ran 2,000 feet of irrigation pipe up a 200-foot cliff and got the water to the turtles. And actually, I was there yesterday morning, and we're able to now just sort of trickle charge these pools to keep them going over the summer so that these refugia pools will be there to support the turtles throughout the summer. Next. So coastal resilience comes in many forms, and the obvious ones are sea level rise and coastal erosion. But there's some less obvious ones that I think were worth calling out. And those are getting us back to the trees and thinking about how do we manage our upper watershed resources to create the resilience through those creek systems so that when we hit the creek, when we hit the ocean, things are in good shape. So thanks to some funding from Supervisor Kuehl's office, the RCD did a major study in collaboration with NASA and the National Park Service. And from that, we were able to identify where the big patterns of die-off were in the Santa Monica Mountains using remote sensing technology that we collaborated and validated with on-the-ground work. And as a result of that, we were able to come up with a planting recommendation plan for LA County, for the Santa Monica Mountains, which is already being implemented now by the National Park Service and State Parks, with priority planting areas, looking at which tree species we should select for, where we should try to collect our seed material and propagate it so that we're getting the species that we already have, but we're picking the individuals that are already the most temperature resilient, and also the ones that are able to handle the infestations of new and not so wonderful invasive pests like the invasive shot-hole borer. So the RCD also worked to pull together an early detection rapid response plan that coordinated all of the county efforts and is now being run through the county, thanks to Supervisor Kuehl's office and her initiative, to look at how do we manage this on a countywide basis so that we're not just doing, you know, individual little actions, but we're doing this in a coordinated way. So invasive species research from bad beetles to crayfish. And red swamp crayfish don't need a whole lot of introduction, but getting them out is a real problem. And we've been partnering with Debbie Sharpton and her team, who are doing a lot of trapping. They pulled out something like 50,000 crayfish last year in a three-month period from Upper Las Virgenes Creek. In Topanga Creek, however, we're not allowed to use traps, because we've got baby steelhead trout that would potentially get caught in the traps. So we're reduced to hand capture, which means many volunteers, lots of kids, hot dogs on a string, nets, and total mayhem in the creek. It is absolutely hysterical, but what's really fun is that the kids get into it and they're pulling out 1,000 to 2,000 crayfish at a time. And so even though we're not making a dent in the whole system, we're targeting the areas where we know the steelhead trout lay their eggs. And so that the areas where the young of the year trout might be most vulnerable, those are the places that we're trying to get and reduce the predation population. So all of these things connect. And thanks to Eric Stein, I've been roped into helping on other technical advisory committees for the LA River and the San Gabriel River. Years ago, we got thinking about the LA River and why there weren't steelhead in there and what the temperature limitations were. So with a grad student from Cal State Long Beach, we actually put in temperature hobos, they're called, tidbit, little temperature loggers. We did a longitudinal profile of the LA River from the estuary all the way up and to Sepulveda Basin. And it was really interesting to see how the temperature patterns shift depending on where you are in the river. And that has led to the basis of a lot of temperature modeling that's being done. And so you never know where these little projects are gonna head. Next. Last but not least, you were talking about education earlier. I think this is the biggest thing that is the most important part of our work. Because the RCD is kind of run like a MASH unit, we have like this low funding for our general fund, and all of our projects are basically funded by grants or contracts. So you never have enough money to do the work that's needed. And we've become expert at getting as many volunteers as we possibly can engaged. But it's not just because we need their help because we can't pay to do the work. What's more important about that is that we're creating people who care and who have a connection. And these AP Environmental high school science students, you know, they're juniors and seniors in high school. They're heading off into the next phase of their life. And for many of them, this is the only opportunity they'd ever get to pull a net in Malibu Lagoon and see what they caught and hold a fish. And those kinds of connections are invaluable. And our RCD education program, field program for younger students, this past year, even with the COVID, had over 5,000 students that we got out into either Sepulveda Basin, Topanga State Park, or Malibu Lagoon, and many thousands more that were on the Zoom calls. So these kinds of connections are really what I think leads us to my last slide, which is I think that what's important about all the work that you do is that you're doing it because you care. Everyone who's sitting in this room cares about the Santa Monica Bay and what's going to happen to the Santa Monica Bay into the future. And that's the key to all of this, because we take care of what we know and we take care of what we love. And so I thank you all for all of the care that you've been giving and for the opportunity to help as things go forward. Thank you.
Elsie, thank you very much for a wonderful presentation and tying it into the action plan that the Bay Commission has adopted was really valuable. Thank you.
Any questions?
Questions for Rosie? Dennis?
Thank you, Rosie. And we've been working together for 30 years now on these kinds of projects. But I think what's critical is where we go from here, and that's the last question you just asked. You know, if we were to actually lend our hand at this point, is the recruitment of, you know, I guess, qualified or qualifiable personnel, or is more money an important issue?
All of the above. All of the above.
Yes. Tessa.
Hi, Rosie. It has been marvelous to work with you and your team at RCD Santa Monica Mountains. You do outstanding work. You talked about education, and my question is, we have a lot of changes that are going to take place in terms of new elected officials coming on board throughout the Bay Area. There'll be a new supervisor, there'll be new council member, many that I think could benefit from learning about this really important work that you do. And there are a lot of competing interests with issues with, you know, homelessness and, you know, poverty and just so many challenges. How do you, this is maybe more of a Clark Stevens question, but how are you all going to sort of get in front of these new elected officials that are coming on board to make sure that they understand these priorities, these really critical issues around habitat restoration and saving species?
That's a really good question that I don't have a good answer for, because I think it's going to, ultimately, it always ends up being based on relationships. So we'll do our best to reach out to all the new people and introduce ourselves and try to get them out into the field and to see all of the things that are so near and dear to all of us. But if you have any suggestions, we're open to that. So thank you. Anything else?
Martha.
Hi, Rosie. Thank you so much for your presentation. Your presentation gives me hope about the future, that we have all these competing interests sometimes in terms of flood control. You know, for us, it's effluent discharge into receiving waters, and how do we do everything that we need to do? And, you know, I like in terms of your example of the turtles, where we can be strategic in terms of helping provide the environment that they need to thrive, and basically focusing on where you might have the most success and where it makes the most sense. And,
and basically that we all need to work together. We all have a common goal. We all want to work towards protecting the environment and kind of working together and trying to see where we can find synergies and be strategic and accomplish our objectives. So thank you.
Thanks.
Anyone else? Yes.
Rosie, a great presentation. Thank you for all that information. I thought it was important. Many of you may or may not know, but steelhead is now listed as a state Canada species as of April 28th.
Yes.
I'll involve a year-long period of candidacy, so it just adds another emphasis on how important this species is. That ability to relay that on top and add more.
Yeah, that was a huge step forward. We're really happy about that. Thank you. Thank you all.
Rosie, I want to thank you on behalf of the Governing Board of the Bay Commission for your commitment to serve on the TAC. Your experience and expertise will be invaluable. Thank you so much. Next item on the agenda is a presentation on the Pure Water Project Demonstration Facility. I'd like to, and this is by the Las Virgenes Municipal Water District, I'd like to introduce Dave Peterson, our General Manager of the Las Virgenes Water District, and the Administering Agent for the Las Virgenes Triumpho Joint Powers Authority. In these roles, he serves as the Chief Executive responsible for water and sanitation services, residents, in the Conejo and Las Virgenes Valleys. Dave has a bachelor's degree in civil engineering and a University of California master's degree. He serves on the boards of the Association of California Water Agencies, Water Reuse of California, the Southern California Water Coalition, and the Urban Water Institute. I know that some of you have had the pleasure of working with Dave for decades. He's done it all in water. And now he's doing it for the customers, Virginia Municipal Water District, and Southern California in general. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Charlie. Thanks for the kind introduction. Charlie, you know, serves as your chair, but when he's not doing that job, he also serves on our board. I think you all know. So good morning, and welcome to our headquarters here. We're excited to host you for your commission meetings. And I just wanted to note, we're going to be doing a tour of our Pure Water Demonstration Facility right after your meeting. I hope you can stick around. It will include lunch, and you have to eat lunch, so you might as well eat lunch with us. And so we'll be showing that facility. So what I want to do, though, is give you a broader perspective of what we're doing with our Pure Water Project. And so you'll see the demonstration facility, but that's just one element of really a much bigger program. And so I'm going to give you an overview of what it is all about. And I think a good place to start is really the water conditions that we're facing right now in California and in the West in general, the Southwest. And I think it's hard to go a single day without reading in the newspaper, usually on the front page, that we are really facing a water crisis here in California and the West that extends into Nevada and Arizona. And we're seeing all of our water supply being constrained in a way that we never imagined. And our water district here, Las Virgenes, in Southern California, is among the most severely impacted by the current drought. And there's a couple reasons for that. One is we lack local water here. So as a water agency, your sort of crown jewel is to have local clean groundwater, and we don't have that here. And we're also challenged in that the location that we serve within the Metropolitan Water District service area, we are the furthest from their other supply sources, the Colorado River and water stored in Diamond Valley Lake. And because of that, we don't have the access that many of the other agencies in the LA Basin enjoy. So with all of that as a backdrop, and in the spirit of being optimistic, this is a project that will really help us. And people will frequently ask, what do we do for the future to be better prepared for droughts? And one important part of that is conservation, but another important part is to develop local water supply and develop local water supplies that are resilient during times of drought. And that's exactly what this project is all about. But as I explain that, to you though, the project didn't start out with that as the primary purpose. It was more about water quality, which is really interesting. So I would advance the slide, and I think there's some animation on this first slide, so if you could click a couple times. So our service area is shown in blue, and that's Las Virgenes Municipal Water District, and click one more time and then stop. So we're shown in blue, about 120 square miles. We have a partner agency. Their service area is in green. They're called the Triumphal Water and Sanitation District. And together, we collect all the wastewater in the region. We treat that wastewater at our Tapia Water Reclamation Plant, and that's shown in the picture at the bottom left. We treat that, make recycled water that's then distributed throughout the community, and we have purple pipe almost throughout all of our communities. In the upper left is our Las Virgenes Reservoir. That's where we store drinking water, and we store about a six-month supply of drinking water for times of emergency. Up right is something that makes us very unique here in that we compost our biosolids. So in treating the wastewater, we create water and solids, and so we take the solids and we compost them. We give that compost away to the community. And of course, the bottom right is Malibu Lagoon and Surf Rider Beach, and those are really, really important features of our watershed. And if you look at the shape of the watershed with the black boundary, the entire watershed drains to that spot, and it's an important spot. So in terms of challenges and drivers, I mentioned developing local water supply, but really the primary driver when we first envisioned this project, and that was back in 2013, 2014, was actually to improve water quality, so the second bullet point, and to meet regulatory requirements. So as being a wastewater provider, we have a role in providing environmental protection, and all of our creeks and streams here are protected. Many of them are impaired water bodies, 303D listed water bodies, including Malibu Creek. There's a connection between nutrient loading in those water bodies and the recycled water that we discharge during certain times of the year. And so this project was really about us getting out of the business of discharging treated water to our creeks, to Malibu Creek, and to really put that water to full beneficial use. That connects with the first bullet point about improving water supply reliability. So as a water agency, we always show these pie charts, and the pie chart you can think of sort of like your investment portfolio. So you want to have as many different slices of the pie as possible. And so you can see on the left, we're not real diversified. We really just have our imported potable water, and then we have recycled water, which we're fortunate to have, and that makes up about 20% of our total water demand. On the right, what you see is we're beginning through this project to diversify more, and we're adding a new slice of the pie for this purified water through the project. It would make up 15% of our water. So that is 15% of the water supply that previously was imported from Northern California and that is currently the most constrained source. So I mentioned discharging to Malibu Creek and getting out of the business of doing that, and so I wanted to explain sort of why that happens, and this graph shows that. So wastewater flows and the volume that comes into our Tapia plant, it's pretty much consistent year-round. And so you see the red line, it's pretty much a flat line. What isn't consistent is the demand on the recycled water system. So in managing a recycled water system, the toughest thing is that the demand is really, really seasonal, much more than the potable water system. It's not surprising because people use more water for irrigation in the summertime when it's hot. They use a lot less and sometimes none in the winter when it's really cool and even raining. So what you have is you have excess where we produce more recycled water than we have demands for in the winter. And then we actually have a shortage in the summer where we do not have enough recycled water to supply all of our demands. So we have a supply and demand imbalance. Now, being an engineer, and I'm an engineer by background, I look at that and I think, oh, well, the answer is simple. We need storage. And so when we really set out to look at this problem, we were envisioning that we were going to build storage, and we were talking about building a new reservoir, which would require a new dam in the Santa Monica Mountains. We knew in doing that, and we were following Ringe Dam, that one of the major dams in the mountains was being removed. And so we were sort of concerned about that and the fact that adding a dam was probably not going to be a popular thing. So we had some foresight in developing a stakeholder-driven process. And I'll really just say, looking back, this was really pivotal in us being successful and coming up with a solution that was, I would say, better than what we had originally envisioned. We did that starting in January of 2015. And the idea was to develop this roadmap, and a roadmap on how do we fully utilize our recycled water. So we brought the stakeholders together. It was actually in this room. In fact, some of you or your organizations were represented. In that process, we sat sort of in a horseshoe format behind me, and we looked at the problem, and we talked about how can we approach this problem and solve it, and we were open to new and different ideas. Our board simultaneously asked us to come up with guiding principles, and those are the guiding principles listed there, maximizing beneficial reuse, seeking cost-effective solutions, seeking partnerships beyond our JPA, gaining community support, governing with a partnership, and being forward-thinking. Here's a list of all of the stakeholders. I'll just add that when we went through the stakeholder process, it was really fascinating to kind of see how we got input and how also we realized that the solution, or at least the solution I had in mind, was probably not the best solution. And the stakeholder process helped guide us to the project that really came forward as being the preferred approach and one that is very much consistent with the NEP actions. And in fact, action number 21 that talks about supporting policies that promote reuse, recycling, to reduce reliance on imported water. Here is a schematic that shows generally the project and how it works. And what we're doing is called potable reuse, which means using our treated wastewater to produce a new source of drinking water. And so if you follow sort of the schematic in the bottom towards the middle, that's our Tapio Water Reclamation Facility. There's a purple pipe that comes from there. That's actually an existing pipeline that brings recycled water throughout our community. In the center of that map, you'll see a box that says AWT. This will be a new state-of-the-art advanced water purification facility, similar to what Martha talked about. And from that, there's two pipelines that will come from that facility. You see the one that's coming from the top that's red in color. That's a smaller pipeline that is what's called a brine or concentrate waste from the advanced treatment process. That will go all the way to the Santa Rosa Valley and connect with a salinity management pipeline that is owned and operated by the Cayugas Municipal Water District. And then the bottom light blue colored pipeline is the purified water. And that pipeline will run to our Las Virgenes Reservoir. That water will be blended in the reservoir. Eventually, then it will be stored and then treated through our what we call our Westlake Filtration Plant that is there already, and then distributed to customers. So it's an innovative project. This type of potable reuse, there's four different types. This is called reservoir augmentation. And this will be one of the first reservoir water augmentation projects in California. Regulations were approved by our state water board in 2018 to allow this. In terms of the treatment process, it's proven technology, the treatment process, and in fact, it's being done throughout the world, most notably in Orange County, the groundwater replenishment system. It's called a multi-barrier treatment system, and that's what we're showing here is the multiple barriers in which we treat the water to ensure that it is entirely safe. In fact, water that we treat through the process is better quality than the water that we currently have in our system. A demonstration project, and you'll see it shortly, is part of the process to move projects like this forward. And a lot of people ask, well, why do you need to do that? The technology is proven, right? So then do you really need to do a demonstration project? And I think the short answer is yes. There's a lot of really valuable reasons to do a demonstration project. Although public acceptance of potable reuse has improved immensely in the last 5 years, it's still important for our community to feel confident that we can do it here and to trust us that we can treat the water safely so that their families and even their kids will drink it. Also, for permitting, it's important to optimize the full-scale plant, which will be down the road. So when we pick equipment and materials, we want to pick the right equipment and materials that will reduce the long-term cost. And then importantly, training our own staff. So our employees here, we don't currently operate what's called a membrane treatment plant. So this is new to us. And so we need to have that experience in operating the plant so that we can do it effectively. And then, of course, public outreach. Research. So next couple slides, a couple photos, renderings of what we envision the project to look like and then what it actually looks like. And then, of course, you'll see it. And I wanted to give a shout out to the commission, too, because this demonstration project would not have happened without the support of your commission. And we were thankful to receive a Proposition 12 grant that helped to fund it. And actually, it was close to $1 million. And so out of the success here is success that each of you should share in. This is what it actually looks like, a picture taken by one of our employees that is one of my favorites. I use it as my Zoom background. And next slide, something that was really important to us, and I hope you see it as you go through, is really thinking about the visitor experience. We wanted to immerse the visitors in what was happening and to sort of make it feel like something they want to learn more about. And so this was one of the renderings. And if you advance, you'll see that's what the inside of the facility looked like. We opened it during the pandemic. It was in September of 2020. So looking ahead a bit more, the demonstration facility is not actually putting the water into our water system. It's really just testing and showing how we would do that. So long-term and the full-scale project is really what is going to provide the new water supply and help to improve water quality in our receiving water. Our schedule is right now we are preparing the environmental document. We actually have an administrative draft of that document, and we're getting ready to prepare it for public review. So in terms of project readiness, I think you all know that the environmental process is probably the most important indicator of whether your project is ready sort of prime time. And we do plan to have that ready this year and to actually complete the environmental document and have it certified by the end of the calendar year. Here's a rendering of what the full-scale facility might look like. And this is at a site in Agoura Hills, a property that we purchased a number of years back for the facility. More photo. Rendering, that's sort of what we're looking at in terms of the building. Our plan is to build it through a design build process. So it's called progressive design build. And what that does is allows a designer and a constructor to work together as a team, be innovative, help us to look at opportunities to reduce cost. It will also allow us to build the project more quickly and get really excited about it. It's going to be and is the largest project that we've ever undertaken. And I used to say that and I was very proud, but then I also learned that all my colleagues in water are all doing the largest projects in their history, right, like Martha. And we have not had the governor come yet, but we have an open invitation and we have his picture on the wall. And so we're hopeful. But we appreciate all your support and your interest in the project. And I'll just say that really projects like this, we can't do them on our own. We can't do them alone. It takes the partnership of each of you, your support and involvement and engagement in the project for us to be successful. And I really appreciate that.
Thank you very much, Dave. Any questions for Dave? Yes, Rory.
I really appreciate how much this project has evolved, and it looks like a really good way to go. So I remember early on there were ideas of piping water into Los Angeles. Is that off the table now? Is that, or is that still like an example?
It is. It is. So originally when we went through the stakeholder process, Rory was one of those stakeholders and was at the table, and we came up with six different options. Only one of them was the reservoir idea, which was quickly started. And the two leading options that the group really liked was this one, Potable Reuse. The other one was a partnership with the City of Los Angeles, DWP, and building a long pipeline that would have brought our recycled water to Encino Reservoir that they own and operate and help them to supply recycled water in the West Valley. And many of you know that LADWP does not have an extensive recycled water system in that area. Really, we were very excited about that, but what kind of we came to the conclusion of, and I think a lot of water agencies are, is water, even our wastewater, is too valuable to be exporting outside of our service area. And really, it's really sort of our fiduciary duty to put that water to its fullest use within the boundaries of our service area to the extent we can. And that was ultimately when we brought it to our board, the factor that I think really made them feel confident that potable reuse was the right future.
Yes, Dennis.
Give us an idea of how we can
good question. So it's interesting. We had a town hall meeting on drought, and, you know, we did, this project came up, and the feedback that I've been getting is like, sort of, we do it faster. Like, what's taking so long? And I love hearing that because it's so different than 10 years ago where people would ask, like, is this safe? Can you do this? And people are really not saying that. They're saying, get it done. Let's do this. And so I appreciate hearing that. I think these are challenging projects. We have to go through the environmental process, but there are also a lot of funding opportunities right now. With the, you know, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, the state budget surplus, some of that money going to climate resiliency, which will undoubtedly include water. I think the environment right now to build a project like this is perfect. So it's really just moving through the process, completing the environmental process, being mindful of stakeholder input, and getting to construction. Our original plan for the project, and we actually have a regulatory time frame, which was to finish the project by 2030. We're planning to do that well in advance of that time frame. And the reason is the project, since we're in the middle of the worst drought that we've ever seen, we need local water supply. This project provides it. And so our plan is to try to finish the project by 2027. Working really hard to do that. I know 2027, it sounds like a long time in the future, but it's not that far away. It's going to be 2027 before we know it.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes.
Hi, Dave. Thanks so much. I'm super excited about the project and for the tour later today. I'm just curious. What you see as the potential for adding stormwater into the mix in the future. I know, you know, without access to groundwater in this area, that does complicate long-term storage. They have a similar issue in South Santa Monica Bay, and there's talk of, you know, potential projects to divert to sewer when safe. And I'm wondering if you see any potential there or if you run into a similar storage issue that you mentioned at the beginning.
No, I see a huge opportunity there. In fact, I really am excited about that. And, you know, we are in the business now of our wastewater plant is 12 million gallons per day capacity. Right now it's running about 6 to 7 million gallons per day. So we're very much in the mode of looking for new sources of wastewater, which is a complete turn in the industry on what you might have done a decade ago. So stormwater, I see, especially dry weather urban runoff that's causing a lot of our pollution of our receiving waters, is a great resource to put in the wastewater system. We have capacity in our treatment plant, and then we can make drinking water out of it. So I'm a big, big fan of that. We've done some study on it in partnership with many of you here, MRSA's agency including, to look at diversion of dry weather urban runoff and even some wet weather first flush stormwater, and to put that in our sewer and then recycle it and make drinking water. And I do think that's going to be a really important part of our future, is really looking for these new sources of water that we can supplement our system with and use our facilities at their fullest capacity.
Yeah, Tom.
Yeah, I was just curious, was there any need for modification or changes of the reservoir with the supply that you're augmenting it with?
Probably not major changes to the reservoir. We will have to, so we will put, the regulations are adopted by the State Water Resources Control Board. They were done in 2018. They do have requirements about the amount of time that the purified water needs to reside in the reservoir, and also the dilution. Our reservoir, we're fortunate, is a fairly large reservoir for the demands that we have on it. So we can make all of that work, which is really, really great. We will be putting the water in one end of the reservoir. We draw it out on the other, which is the way you want to do it. We'll probably have to look at some mixing. That will be the key thing, is mixing in the reservoir, and that's kind of a healthy thing for a reservoir anyway. You want the water to mix and blend, but nothing major. It won't require enlarging the reservoir or major modification. So we're thinking that these are improvements that will be helpful anyway, and so we'll be including that as part of the project.
Yes.
That was a lot of great information. I do have a question in terms of type of features for beneficial uses for factored into this approach. Great presentation by Rosie about steelhead, about green, flow and provisions.
Good question. So that has been something important to us for a long time, and we actually have a flow regime requirement that we support for Malibu Creek, and that we have been doing for many years and intend to continue going forward. And so during the hottest part of the summer, and when the creek flows, Malibu Creek flow based on a gauging station that the county operates, when it dips below a certain level, we actually will augment, and in fact, we're required to augment the flow to sort of trim the flow in Malibu Creek to 2.5 CFS. So we're planning to continue to do that going forward. And so when we look at recycling and purifying this water, we're always mindful of the fact that we need to continue doing that, and we plan for that. And it's important for the steelhead and the tidewater goby.
Any other questions? Dave, thank you very much for a great presentation. This item on the agenda. Does staff have any other business to bring to the board's attention?
No, Chair.
Thank you. We do not have a closed session scheduled for today. Any final comments, members of the governing board, on issues not otherwise on the agenda? And the next, I will announce that the next meeting of the governing board will be held August 18th at 9:30 a.m. Location may change. Staff is working diligently to find a location that's centrally located for all members of the governing board. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you all for attending.